This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
And that is launched out to deep left field. Big fly for Mike Trout.
This is ground ball to second base. Rhett Hinkle falls down, picks it up, fires the first. The Angels have no hit. The Seattle Mariners. It's gone. Big fly for Anthony Rendon.
Hey guys, I'm Alex Curry.
This is Joe Adell here with the Los Angeles Angels.
This is Brendan Marsh.
This is Chris Rodriguez.
You're listening to the All Angels Podcast.
And welcome to another edition of the All Angels Podcast. I am Dan Garcia, and on this episode, we bring back Rhett Bollinger, MLB.com beat writer for the Angels, has been with the Angels this whole season, the last handful of seasons as well. If you're new to the podcast, he's a great guy to follow, great guy to listen to and read. If you've been around this podcast, you know how much we love having him on. Giving us information, giving us what he knows, and able just to ask him questions and honestly get his perspective on things. A guy that has been around the team this whole season, has talked to Joe Maddon, has talked to players, has talked to Perry. So here's the interview with Rhett. I really hope you enjoy it. Check it out. And I want to welcome back friend of the podcast. Obviously, he's been here so many times now with the season about 3 weeks left. Rhett Bollinger from MLB.com. Rhett, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, obviously the season, we had you around the beginning, we had you around the middle. This is towards the end now. At the beginning, there was so much hope and promise, you know, with Trout, Rendon, Bundy being what we thought Bundy was going to be, you know, after last year. Obviously, the injuries had a huge, huge role in a lot of this. Trout only playing, you know, a handful of games, it feels like. Same thing with Rendon. But other than that injury bug, if you will, what is another thing that really hurt the Angels this year?
Well, obviously, injuries, like you said, are a big part of that. I think, too, just not having a rotation that could really count on throughout the year. We saw some glimpses of guys, even, you know, Alex Cobb had that great start against the White Sox today. And, you know, he's actually been pretty good when he's been healthy. But, you know, Sandoval shows some glimpses too, but same thing, not healthy. So some of it is health, but it's some of it just that rotation with Bundy not performing well and Quintana, same thing. Heaney never really got it going. And, you know, they were able at least to trade him for some pitching prospects, which obviously was a great move for them. But they never really got that rotation on track. And even the bullpen, you know, early, it seems like they're trying to adjust to some of these new roles. It never really felt like it was really settled. Iglesias struggled early, and then sure enough, ended up being, you know, probably the best closer in the American League by the end of the season here. But the rest of the bullpen never really gelled. But, you know, Cishek actually did okay, but better than okay, actually, after a slow start. But, yeah, I just never really – nothing really ever came together. It was like if the rotation was kind of doing well, the offense was struggling, and vice versa. So they never really put together a run of any sort. But also they never really went on a crazy, you know, losing streak really either, when this team definitely could have in the second half. And kind of given up in a weird way just because of all the injuries and just, you know, nothing really to play for. But to their credit, they've actually played pretty, you know, pretty hard in the second half, and, you know, beating the White Sox in a, you know, this series here was, I think, big for them. So, yeah, just a lot of things didn't go well. Considering that, I guess it could have gone a lot worse. It could have gone a lot worse, but clearly they're right around 500 still, and it's kind of what they've been all year.
And you kind of mentioned it a little bit with the bullpen and getting guys in, young guys in especially, pitching wise too. Like, I know you spend a lot of time with the Twins before you came over to the Angels, and this is, I think, going to finish like your third or fourth season with the Angels. But in that short time, have you seen, you know, I guess you can even include the Twins. Have you seen so many young guys get brought up fairly quickly, it seems like?
Yeah, it's pretty rare to see this many guys. I think some of it too is just because of the pandemic, you know, with last year being a shortened season. And then this year, it seems like a lot of teams are already setting records for most players use, just because of, you know, whether it's injuries or just guys, you know, ineffectiveness, or guys that, you know, the long season, I think, has kind of worn on some guys. So we've seen a lot more, you know, kind of new faces. But no, I mean, it's been a lot, but I think it's been good just to kind of get a feel for some of these guys. And you know, like a guy like Austin Warren has pitched so well. You know, obviously I know he's been out with COVID, but before that, it was, you know, he pitched so well himself now in a really good role for next year. And we're seeing some of these other guys, Jansen Junk, get a chance up here. And, you know, Marte did before he went on the COVID list. And, you know, Andrew Wance, or you know, so we're seeing some different arms now, which I think is good for the future. And, we talked about it before with their draft strategy of taking all 20 pitchers and even their trade strategy. You know, they traded, you know, Tony Watson for pitching. They traded Andrew Heaney for pitching. So I think they're just trying to get as many guys as they can and then just kind of see what they can do. So I think it actually worked out pretty well for them. They're able to put in this many young guys the second half and kind of figure out what they have for next season.
So obviously that the young guys didn't stay in the pitching rotation or the bullpen. We also saw some young guys out in the field, especially with Brandon Marsh and Joe Adell. Are these guys kind of, in your eyes, obviously, you know, nothing's known for sure because it's still not even the offseason yet, but are these guys kind of locks to be in that outfield for next season?
Not quite locks, but certainly right there with that. I think they like the, you know, improvements from Adell. Just from last year, you know, his rookie year was so rough offensively and defensively. You know, this year looked comfortable and, you know, defensively and offensively started to look better at the plate. You know, obviously now he's out for the year, it looks like, with that back injury from crashing into the wall. And Brandon Marsh, too, starting to kind of – he started to heat up after a slow start. He's looked great defensively in center field. You know, I think next year you compare those two with Trout and see what they have left. And, you know, Upton – you know, he had that one flash there when he was batting leadoff where he played so well. Outside of that this year, it was kind of the same Upton we've seen now for the last, you know, 3 years, really. So he's still going to be in that mix because of his salary. You know, I think he's due almost like, you know, $30 million next year. And then from there, they got to figure out if they want to try to find another veteran like they did last offseason to kind of push those guys and have another, you know, presence in there. And but we'll see. I mean, they also have Taylor Ward kind of in that mix. I know he's been hurt too in the second half a lot too, but they did like him early. But it would surprise me if they went after a veteran. You know, Dexter Fowler was that guy this offseason. You know, we know he got hurt, same thing, really early in the year with that knee injury that required surgery. So it wouldn't shock me if they brought in a veteran to push those two guys. So I wouldn't say that they're locks at this point, but definitely in that mix 100%.
So with Joe, and you mentioned it a little bit with his season last year, and everyone remembers the struggles he had in the field and obviously at the plate, and everyone's biggest question coming into this was the outfield and can he play a MLB caliber outfield? Were you able at all to talk to him, you know, on the field pregame or even in an interview or anything like that and find out what's the biggest difference? Like, what did he work on, or if there's anything that he did different from his offseason to get better at that?
I think there's just more reps out there too. And I think the coaching staff kind of helped him get better jumps and better reads originally. And then from there, I think just the confidence got better because part of it too was just last year, he kind of smells like lost out there. And, you know, even when he got to the ball, you know, he had the one obviously go off him for the home run in Texas and just a lot of plays that looked, you know, most guys make it look pretty routine. He did not make it look very routine. I think he just kind of plays now with a little bit more like confidence and swagger. You can just kind of tell the way he carries himself on the field. I think that kind of helps his defense too, because he's not so timid out there or afraid of the ball coming toward him. You know, he's making all the plays that need to be made and some really good ones too, and showing off his arm. He has a good arm out there too. But I do think the coaching staffs, you know, at AAA and just in general at spring training, just a lot of extra work out there in the outfield, trying to learn different angles out there, out of the way the ball kind of plays. And I know he played a lot of center when he was younger too. So learning the corners, I think, has been important for him. So yeah, just a lot of that work. And I think we've seen, you know, even Trout was doing a lot of extra work in the outfield early before he got hurt too. They know Madden's someone that really, you know, values, you know, outfield defense.
So you talk about defense in the outfield, and I think Brandon Marsh was the main reason why he got brought up when he did. It seemed kind of early, kind of projection wise, but his defense has always been really, really valued. You know, with his offensive struggles at the beginning, was there any concern with the Angels about them maybe bringing him up too soon?
I don't think so, just because at that point they didn't really have that many other options, and I felt like they felt like he had a, you know, a decent run, but also as you know, he didn't really play as much in the minor leagues because of injuries and that kind of stuff. It kind of limited him, and So I think there might have been, just the early struggles kind of happened to everybody. It seems like he wasn't too overmatched. He's still pretty good about withdraws, walks sometimes, and, still has a pretty good feel for the plate, having a good plate discipline. So I think that kind of helped because he didn't look too lost up there. But, started to heat up after that, and that really kind of showed that, okay, he started to show that he can belong up here. But you are right, he didn't have as much time to get seasoned in the minors, and at least this year with Dell, it seemed like they kept him down there for a long time. If anything, a lot of fans are mad and felt like Dell was down there for too long. But it just kind of shows you that, like, they do need that seasoning, and I think it worked out well. Adele did look a lot better, and if they would have brought Adele to start the year early in the year, who knows if he would have had that kind of look as good as he did. And so we'll kind of see, like I said, and there's still a chance that maybe next year those guys aren't up here, but I do think they find themselves, both of them, are in a pretty good position now.
So obviously you can't talk about any bright spots with the Angels without talking about Shohei Ohtani and the season that he's putting together, both obviously at the plate and on the mound. Talk about this season in general, because I mean, it'd be hard pressed to find anyone that at the beginning of the year saw this coming, saw the numbers, saw the home runs, saw the strikeouts, saw him honestly staying healthy for the most part. Like, talk about this season and how crazy it is.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, part of it too was even in spring training when Joe was telling us that Shohei Ohtani was full go and no restrictions and all that. I still thought it meant like he was going to be pitching, once a week and then, DHing 4 to 5 times a week. And maybe later in the year, maybe they'd bat him when he pitched or before and after. I never thought that he was actually going to be out there DH pretty much every single day and then pitching and hitting at the same time every time too, pretty much outside of a handful of times for, a couple different reasons. But so that was amazing. And then just that White Sox series to start the year when he hit that home run in the same game he was pitching. That was kind of the one that kind of, to me, kind of was like, wow, he just hit was throwing 100 miles per hour and hit the home run, like 115 miles per hour, what it was. That kind of opened the eyes to everyone. I was like, wow, like he can do both,
right?
Like at the same time. And like, this guy can be like something we've never seen before. And, writing about him all year, there's been so many milestones he's hit. And, just to be able to have a season where he's hit 40 home runs and he's going to steal 25 bases, it looks like, too. And then to have, couldn't quite, it doesn't look like he might not get another start. So he might fall short of the 10 wins, but still an ERA in the low threes, more than 100 strikeouts. I mean, all that stuff is just pretty incredible. And that's why he's the front runner for the, MVP award here with Vladimir Guerrero, obviously part of that as well.
Yeah. And that's kind of actually been a hot topic, within the last, week or so about Vlad and him catching fire. Then as we record this now, Vlad actually having the MLB lead for home runs. Do you see any way where Vlad could catch Shohei, or even if Shohei doesn't pitch the rest of the season and those are his pitching numbers, are not going to change, he's not going to pitch, but he's still DHs, is there any way that Vlad catches up, you think, to Ohtani in that MVP kind of discussion?
I don't think so. I think that just because even if Vlad does have a better year offensively, which it looks like he might end up having more home runs or average and everything else, he's not a very good defensive first baseman as it is. And then that's all he really offers. He doesn't really run well. He doesn't steal bases. But then you figure that, Tani hits like that, but also is a, a great base runner. And he's, among the league leaders in stolen bases. On top of it, he's been one of the best pitchers in the American League on top of it. So, to me, it's definitely Shohei. I mean, I'd be shocked if he even doesn't win unanimously just because he's done so much stuff that no one's ever seen before. But maybe someone just really values, Guerrero's offense that much. They think that it was better than Shohei's offense and his pitching combined. I just think it's going to be hard to find somebody who doesn't understand that, to do both of those things is unprecedented. And he's been, elite at both. And to have both those guys in one player, it's just, unbelievable.
How much do you think, because the Toronto fans or just the pro Vlad Jr. fans are saying, well, his team's in the playoff hunt. It could be in the wild card. He could have the triple crown. Is that something that the writers that vote on this look at? And like, obviously, any other year, the triple crown would mean something. But does it still kind of hold that prestige seeing that it just happened, with Miguel Cabrera, what was it, like 10 years ago or whatever, however long it was?
Not as much. I think, too, a lot of the voters are trending younger now, too. and they don't really care about who leads, you know, the league in RBIs or batting average as much anymore either. And so I think that's kind of changed it a little bit. I think people look more at the stats like WAR and that kind of thing to kind of see who's the best. And if you look at that stat, like Shohei's so much better than everybody because he has the combined, you know, pitching and hitting WAR. So he's like two players in one. So that's why I think that most, you know, there certainly are, you're right, I guess like an older demographic of voters that would feel more, you know, care more about the Triple Crown or even just being in contention for a postseason. But we know when Trout won his MVPs, you know, what, two of them at least, they were not a very good team. And obviously the first person to really do that was A-Rod way back when he won his with the Rangers when they were like a last place team. But yeah, I mean, I guess you're right. Those are factors people look at, but I think they usually see those as like tiebreakers. And I just don't really see a situation where Shohei and him are really tied as top two candidates. I just think Shohei's had a better year just because of the pitching on top of the hitting. And just, it's just too much. It's just more than Vladimir's done.
So obviously, I guess the big also elephant in the room is obviously Shohei is signed under contract for next season, but the year after that is his last arbitration year. Again, too, like obviously the Angels aren't probably out here talking about it, but if you had a gut instinct about it, do you think they even go into that last arbitration year, or do you think they get a long-term deal before it even gets to that point?
I think they're going to do everything they can to make that happen. Whether or not that does happen is hard to predict. But the same kind of thing with Trout. They extended him with the 2 years left on his deal, and then kind of got it done, which wasn't a distraction. So I think that Perry and them would love to talk to, you know, Nez and get this done with this offseason. And it might be something that drags on all offseason, doesn't happen until closer to opening day, kind of like Trout's was like a, you know, right at the end of spring training type of deal. But yeah, that's what they'd love to do. It's just a matter of figuring out his market value, right? It's just so hard to know.
How do you do that?
Because, yeah, like, because I said, like we talked about earlier, he's two players in one. So how do you pay him in that sense? But also, for how long is he two players in one? Like, we don't know if you sign him to a 7-year deal or a 10-year deal, how many years is he going to be able to do both? You hope, obviously, as long as possible, but no one's really done it before. And, you know, is fatigue or injury going to set in? Is there going to be a time where maybe he's just going to have to be a position player because his pitching arm, you know, just, he's got hurt or something or whatever. Just hard to predict. There's so many different scenarios that can happen with him that it's just hard to figure out exactly what he's worth. But I do think that's going to be the big key for them this offseason. Of course, I think they're going to have to figure out how to get pitching and all that. But I think the other big priority is especially, you know, and I said it might last into spring training, but I think trying to find a way to lock up Shohei long-term and maybe Shohei wants to wait another year or even go into free agency and see. Well, we don't really know yet what Shohei's intentions are, and he's obviously very quiet about that. But for the team's sake, they definitely want to try to get this done, I'm sure. And we'll do everything they can to get done before the start of the season.
So if Rhett Bollinger was the GM of the Angels, what is a reasonable contract offer you think would work as far as, like you mentioned, like he could be a two-way player for what, the next 2-3 years, but after that, like, who knows? Like, what kind of contract would you put out there for an offer Ohtani?
It's hard to say. I mean, he's probably, gosh, it would at least probably have to be 30 to 40 million a year, I'm sure, with, you know, probably 7 years or something, probably. I mean, to get it done, that's probably what he's looking for, I'm guessing. Because, you know, that's the top players not getting like $30 to $40 million a year now. And that's what Ohtani's proven being an MVP. But the question is, like I said, it's only been this 1 year, and obviously it's to prove he's healthy. I don't know if a team would want to sign him to a 10-year deal because there's so much unknown in terms of, like, the length of his career. You know, he's younger, but, like, injury-wise, or I guess, or at the end of that, it's just going to be, you know, what kind of position player is he going to be? Is he going to be a really good outfielder defensively? You don't really know. So it's just hard to tell, but he's not going to be cheap. I mean, he's going to be paid like an elite player. Just a matter of how they kind of figure all that out.
So Ohtani wins MVP. He's another guy to build on. So you have Trout, you know, theoretically coming back. You have Rendon coming back. You have Ohtani, you know, hopefully continue to do what he's doing. Walsh, you have hopefully, you know, Stassi, I think, is under control for one more year. So the biggest question, it seems like, in that lineup as of where we sit right now is that shortstop position, where obviously they brought in Jose Iglesias, didn't work. He is no longer with the team. And it kind of does seem like they're kind of working out that shortstop position, whether it be Renjifo, Mayfield, or anyone else. Do you think this team needs one of these big shortstop free agents, Correa, Seager, fill in the blank? Or do you think there's enough firepower with the guys I mentioned already to where they can maybe go a little cheaper or something in-house for next season?
Yeah, what I'm kind of hearing, what I'm thinking is that they're probably going to be more likely to go either something cheaper, something more in-house, and kind of just cover up the shortstop position as best as they can, but kind of go with more the resources toward pitching, whether it's keeping Raisel Iglesias, obviously, as their closer and locking him up. And then, you know, from there, finding at least two, you know, really high-quality starting pitchers, whether it's via free agency or via trade. And then obviously remake the bullpen and from everything from there. So I think that's kind of their priority more so than shortstop. We'll kind of see how the market kind of looks and if anyone's prices drop or, you know, there's a fit there. But I just don't see them really going out there and making a big splash at shortstop just because I think that they just need pitching so bad. They did that a couple years ago with Rendon. That was a big surprise to a lot of people, including me, to go spend money on third base instead of pitching. So to do that again on a shortstop would be same thing, would be really surprising, just knowing how much they need pitching. I think it's more likely they don't go crazy at shortstop, but actually do spend money to fix the pitching, but not really so much at shortstop.
I don't know about you, but I kind of feel like it seems like Perry kind of has Artie's ear more so than maybe other GMs in the past. You've seen it with moves like releasing Pujols. Like, I mean, there was a time where no one thought, regardless of how bad he played, that was ever going to happen. Do you think Perry is kind of putting his foot down on some of these calls? And maybe you're right, because it's you say not spending on a bunch on a shortstop, but as Angel fans knows in the past, it seems like when Artie doesn't get like the Gerrit Cole, like you talk about Rendon, he didn't get Gerrit Cole, so he went for the next big thing, and that was Rendon to spend a ton of money. Do you think if he doesn't get one of these top line pitchers that he's going to go spend the money somewhere else and just almost not throw it away, but maybe not put it where it should be? Or do you think Perry's kind of like, hey, you know, we can't overreact to not getting a top guy?
Well, I think at this point, I think that Artie knows, and obviously Perry is a big part of this, but I think Artie knows just how desperate they are to get pitching. You know, you talked about earlier just with all the ways they're trying now, whether it's been the draft or through trades to get pitching. They really want pitching. So I think that Artie knows that, obviously, you don't trust Perry with that, but even if they miss on a very top tier target, they just continue to spend on pitching anyway and try to, you know, really try to fix his pitching staff. I said, even the bullpen too, but the rotation as well. You got to figure that, you know, they already have some locks in that rotation, but not too many, you know, Otani, you got to think that Sandoval is in there, obviously, with the way he pitched this year. And, you know, maybe Suarez is pitching his way into that mix, and maybe they bring back Cobb. But other than that, you know, some of the other guys are free agents, or, you know, Bundy's gone, and, you know, obviously they've already lost Quintana to, you know, when they released him, and Heaney when they traded him. So they still don't have as much, you know, they're seeing what guy, you know, Detmers could be in that mix too. Chris Rodriguez, there's some guys that could be part of that mix, but they don't really have, you know, so they got to get at least like two starters, and they're not going to be cheap. So to me, I think it's just most of their money is going to go toward those starting pitchers, and then potentially, you know, bringing back Raisel Iglesias too. That'll be a priority, and fixing that bullpen. So there's enough money to spend on things of need. They don't have to really go too crazy on shortstop, I feel like.
So I put that out on Twitter that we were talking today, and I got a question from at Barry Perez 15, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here, but he wanted to know, you know, do you see any possibility there's any kind of baseball ops transitions in this offseason as far as scouting or, you know, obviously Perry's kind of solid where he's at, but do you see any other kind of baseball ops transitions?
It's a great question and one that I really want to find the answer out to, because I think here in the next few weeks, we're going to have one of those end of the season sessions with Perry. And I meant to ask that last time too, because I was curious to see if there's going to be more moves this offseason. Usually there are. So I covered the Twins right before, you know, I left here for minutes, or I covered the Angels. I started covering the Angels in 2019, and the Twins, I think in 17, made a GM move. And then a lot of 18 and 19 was like, yeah, like they kept some guys in-house and then either kind of got rid of those guys because they didn't feel like they fit, or, you know, obviously kept them, but then also brought in a bunch of new guys. And we already know there are new guys in the org. But the question is, yeah, is Perry going to add more of those guys? Is there going to be more, you know, in-house advanced stat type guys, you know, analysts, that kind of thing? It's a good question. I don't know that answer, but yeah, I think that's one of the big things I want to find out this offseason.
So another question we got on Twitter from at Chewing Caster buddy Mike Brown. He wanted to simply know, when will the pain end? And I guess this is a good way of bringing up the future. Like, we mentioned some of the names already. Obviously, a lot of them in the pitching, whether it be, you know, Suarez, Sandoval, Detmers, you know, even Bachman now is moving up through the system. How do you feel about the foundation of this team? Obviously, they can always add pitching, like you mentioned, in free agency. But the foundation of these guys that are now seeming to be maturing through the system, how do you feel maybe, you know, a year ago today? Like, do you feel more comfortable? Do you think they're still kind of the same spot with those kind of foundation pieces?
I think a little bit more comfortable. And I think, you know, we saw a lot of these young guys. You talked about earlier, there's just been a lot more of them than usual, especially for the Angels, to kind of actually have some guys that are worth, you know, watching and worth seeing how they do. And so I do think that, you know, Detmer showed promise, and Rodriguez, if he's healthy, showed a lot of promise. And Sandoval was much better than I expected. Suarez, same thing. You know, Berea has been kind of Berea, you know, he's been solid enough. But yeah, so I mean, that part has been a good thing. And I talked about Austin Warren has looked good for a, you know, young reliever. So there's been some, you know, some hits at least. And I feel like some guys that look better. And then from there, you know, you have your veteran core that, you know, you got to count on. I think, you know, I think it's actually pretty incredible that they've had, you know, Trout and Rendon out for as long as they've had. In fact, they've even been able to stick around 500 and never really nosedived. And I've covered a lot of teams, I've been around a lot of teams, including the, you know, Angels in 2019. They really kind of had that nosedive late in the season when the games didn't really matter. And the fact that they're actually still playing hard and like winning these games and winning a series in Chicago kind of tells me that the guys are buying into Joe Maddon's kind of whole thing. So I think if they can, if the guys continue to buy in like this and they actually have health and have like Trout and Rendon and everybody in that lineup kind of healthy and productive, that they can, you know, be a winning team again. It's just the same thing. They got to figure out what they want to do with their rotation and bullpen and, you know, continue to improve that, because some of these guys did pop up this year, which is a good thing. But there's still a lot of work to be done. And I do think that they're trending in the right direction. It's just, I do think this year that the Trout and Rendon injuries really did kind of, were kind of the big nail in the coffin for sure, but they didn't totally sink the whole team, but they couldn't, without those guys, they just don't have the depth to win.
So obviously, you know, the injuries, like you mentioned, the Rendon, the Trouts, the, you know, now the Adeles and stuff like that, the injuries there. And we had another question from, this is on Instagram, Andrizzle, at Andrizzle. Is anyone going to point the finger to the training staff for all these injuries? How does that work as far as, you know, you guys get the information you are given and you report that information, whether you believe it or not, I guess it's kind of up to the individual person, but how does that work with a franchise? Like, do they point the finger at, you know, the training staffs?
Yeah, it's a fair question, because I think one of the issues we've seen this year, more than most years, is just there's been an issue where they've said so-and-so is going to be out for only a few days, and then sure enough, it becomes a few weeks. Or, you know, so-and-so is going to be back, like Trout, right after the All-Star break, and same with Rendon, and all of a sudden it goes from right after the All-Star break to being out for the season. So, like, that's been one of the biggest issues. So they've got to figure out a way to get their timetables right, or just don't give them at all. And so that's a real question, though. But the way you kind of put that pressure on, though, and same kind of thing, is at the end of the season here, when we sit with Perry, it's going to be a question. It's going to be a real thing. I'm going to say, you know, how confident are you this training staff is doing a good job or doing the right job, or what do you think you need to do to improve this? And so it's going to be on, like we talked about earlier, with some of these changes. And I don't know if there's going to be any with the training staff, but it's something Perry has to really look into and see if, you know, it is worth making some sort of change, or even just if it's not, you know, at least change some sort of their practices or something, or because clearly their whole, you know, timeline and everything else is here. And some of it might be on Maddon too, though, for just not communicating it correctly and not doing the right job in terms of relaying the correct info to their reporters and just kind of thinking everything's a minor injury when they're worse than that. So it just, I think more so than any other year that I can remember, that there's just been a lot of like, oh, guys, you know, day to day, he's fine. All of a sudden being always on the injured list, or, oh, now he's out for the year. So yeah, no, it's a fair question. Same thing. I think it's something that'll be addressed this off season because I think Perry is obviously aware of it too, and so is ownership. They know that that's been an issue this year. So and the fans know, you know. So we'll kind of see how it goes. And as reporters, our job is to kind of question and find out, you know, and make sure they know, and then see what they're going to do to try to address that.
How does that kind of chain of communication work? Is Madden getting his information straight from the trainer, or is it like, does the trainer talk to the PR? The PR tells Madden, like, is there like a telephone kind of situation where there's maybe something gets lost in the transition, or how do you know how that works?
Yeah, it depends. Yeah, generally, sometimes, you know, Madden talk to the trainers directly and get it exactly what happened, but sometimes they'll just get the training report. Like, they'll give them an email that has a list of everybody's injuries. That's kind of what the PR staff gets too. Sometimes, though, Joe's not great about checking everything or really being up to date on it, it seems like sometimes. So that's one of the issues, because we'll ask him and then he'll look to the PR staff and they'll have the update, but he'll, you know, he didn't get it yet or didn't notice it. So, and he always says too, he's always more focused on the guys that are on the field and ready to play than always being up to date on injuries. But yeah, I think so. It's more, they have like a daily report that the training staff gives out, and it gives out to the PR staff and Joe and everybody, but it's Joe's job to read it and then understand it and be able to answer questions about it. And sometimes it seems like Joe will just kind of forget to read it before the game. And so who knows? So yeah, there's definitely got to be some sort. That's got to be something I'm sure the front office has got to sit down for next in this offseason and figure out that they need to be better in that sense. Because this year, you're right, fans have been frustrated, and rightfully so. It's been pretty rough to see guys being barely injured to all of a sudden being out for a whole season.
Yeah. Do you see, obviously, Joe going into next season? I don't think there's any question that he's going to start next season as a manager and probably will finish the season next year as manager. But do you see next year as a possibly hot seat type of year for Joe if the team still is hovering around 500, not able to kind of take that next big step?
Only if they really have a nosedive where they really give up on him, I think, kind of like the Auspice year, where that was obviously a tough year in general and they had the Skaggs thing, but those kind of teams where they really just like August, September, just totally fall off a cliff. If that were to happen and they totally kind of lost confidence, maybe. But even this year, like I said, I think just being around them, the fact that they haven't had that happen, I do think there is some sort of a buy-in. And I do think that Artie likes Joe. And I think that Perry does too. And Perry and Joe seem to get along well. They're kind of on the same page. And, you know, it's kind of nice that Perry's more of an old school guy too. Even if he's not like actually old, he's more kind of an older school being like, you know, being a guy who was a clubhouse manager, not someone that was a, you know, Harvard educated, like, you know, research analyst that happened to like baseball. So right. I think there's a little bit better of communication with those two. Not to say that that was a Billy thing or Billy was that way, but like, but I do think that there's a good communication between, you know, Joe. And so, yeah, it would have to take something pretty extreme to me. I think that right as of right now, I think that, you know, I don't think Artie or anybody blames Joe for this season or even last season. I think a lot of it's just been, you know, injuries and it's not having the pitching staff just to win.
So obviously going forward now into the off season, into the spring training next year, I'm going to give you some names and just your best gut instinct. Again, we don't know who is going to be on the, you know, 26 man roster coming to spring training, but Steve Cishek, is he with the team opening day?
I don't think so. I think that he had a good year with the team, and I think that especially for the $1 million contract they signed him to, but I think that they liked what he did for them, but I think they're probably ready to let him go somewhere else as a veteran.
Rossell Iglesias. We talked about him earlier. Do you think they get the deal done?
I think they're going to – yes, just because I think they know that he's just so good that they don't really have anything else internal to be a closer right now, and it'll just be – he seemed to like it there. So I think they get it done. I don't know what it's going to take. To be honest, it's always hard to figure out the right market for a reliever and a closer, but he's been pretty consistently good for the last, you know, 5 years or so. So it's not going to be cheap, but I think they find a way to keep him.
Alex Cobb, you mentioned he had a really good start Thursday afternoon coming back from injury. He almost seemed like a slam dunk to come back before the injury. Now with the injury concern, do you see him being on the opening day roster in 2022?
I think so too. I think maybe they work out a 1 year deal with him. It gives him a chance after being kind of injured to potentially even reset his market. I know he's getting a little bit up there in age, but at least get a 1 year deal, let the Angels see what they have in him. And if he can stay fully healthy, We know he's going to be, he can be pretty good when he's healthy now. And then from there, he can reset the market and be a free agent again. So I don't, unless some other team really wants to give him a multi-year deal, and maybe that'll happen. Unless someone really overbids for him, I think the Angels will try to keep him. Same thing, I think he likes it in Anaheim. So those are, I think those two guys are the guys they want to bring back.
Let's go with Jack Mayfield.
I mean, he's still under contract. I think he'll still be under team control. So I think he'll still be around as a potential backup infielder.
What about Phil Gosselin?
Same kind of thing. They might bring both those guys back just to kind of have guys that are backup infielders and let them compete in camp. And if whoever, they could even DFA them after. I guess I'll have to see. I think Gosselin though, might be a guy that could maybe – I think Mayfield has a better chance than Gosselin because Mayfield's a better defender. But I think Gosselin has a chance too just because same thing. I think he's under team control.
And you kind of mentioned this earlier with Upton and his contract situation. It doesn't seem like he's going to go anywhere. But at least he'll start with the team definitely for 2022. But do you think he finishes the season with the Angels in 2022?
Potentially not. We could see another thing like kind of Albert and just kind of a decision to be like, hey, it's time to cut bait because, if March and Adele are kind of the two guys around Trout and they feel like they have enough, other outfield options, it could happen. But we'll see. Yeah, like I said, this year he showed some flashes that one stretch where he was leading off. He looked great again. And then sure enough, got hurt, hurt his back. And then ever since then, he's, hasn't really hit. And maybe he's been hurt all year, but he's been hurt now. He's been having injuries for years now. So it's hard to really imagine him putting together a fully healthy, really productive year because he hasn't done it in so many years now. So you could see him being DFA'd at some point, but I don't think they could probably really trade him or anything like that because there's not much value.
So keeping it in the outfield, Juan Lagares.
Probably not. Potentially, but probably not. I think maybe let him get a chance to catch on somewhere else. I was surprised that, he lasted all year too. I mean, but to his credit, he's a good defender. He's showing a little bit of power, but doesn't really hit enough. I think it's probably just this one year here with the Angels.
And the name everyone wants, most of the people want in an Angel uniform, Max Scherzer.
I think probably not. I mean, obviously they'd love to do that. And if he's available and I know obviously he's going to be a free agent, but if he's, amenable and is interested in the Angels, I mean, of course they should go all in and try to do it because even at his advanced age, he's still incredible. I think the Dodgers still might have a real chance to want to keep him depending on everything goes in the postseason and everything else. But even from the way he's been kind of talking about being there, but also Kershaw could opt out. And so they have to re-sign both those guys. It'll be interesting to see, what they're able to do with that because they'll probably let Seager walk now they traded for Trey Turner. But it does seem like Scherzer wants to stay on the West Coast. And same thing, if Artie wants to make a splash, at least this time it would make a lot of sense as a pitcher. So you can't rule it out. I mean, I'd probably lean more likely no, but I do think that there's certainly a chance that could happen.
How do you feel about those older that contract? You talk about Max, and he's going to be up there in age, obviously. There's no way you can give him like a 5 or 6 year contract, is there? I mean,
probably not. No, it'd probably be like a 3 year deal, but it might be 3 years and $100 million though, or something, which is crazy. but yeah,
that would definitely be a huge contract. So, last question I got for you, Red, and again, thank you so much for not only this time but throughout the whole year and the spring training and everything like that. This one is from our Instagram. Lem.Reyes wanted to ask favorite moment covering the 2021 season, but I'm going to add this, can't say Ohtani because it's obviously the slam dunk.
Ooh, hey, wow. Cause yeah, definitely Ohtani. I'm just going to talk about Ohtani anyway, because that home run he hit in Chicago or the Chicago series when he was pitching and hit the home run, that was the craziest thing I've ever seen. The one at the Trop was insane off the top up there.
Yeah.
The other one, what was it? Oh, the 1-0 in Seattle when he went top deck.
Oh, yeah.
That was incredible.
Missed that by one day. Came in the next day. Missed it by one day.
Yeah. Trying to think of what else. This is pretty much all I ever think about it, all the showing stuff. it was really cool seeing Suarez throw the complete game. I feel like complete games, it's never happened anymore. I wanted to see him throw a shutout, which would have been cool. But yeah, the series in Detroit was memorable because that was the big comeback game where they were down by like eight runs and came back and won. And then, Dell had the grand slam. And then they had, the Ohtani through eight innings. They hit the home run. That was really cool. And then, of course, really the most memorable thing for me, too, was just the Little League World Series Classic.
Oh, yeah.
That was cool. I got to go to the Little League World Series in the morning and see some of the games and then go that night to the minor league stadium and see, the Indians play the Angels. And that was cool. We had really cool, like, up-close seats, more so than usual. And, it was just cool to see that game up close. So I always remember going to Williamsport. It's kind of one of those cool MLB things they've done. And we're fortunate a couple years ago to go to Monterrey, Mexico. I got to go to Puerto Rico a couple years before that. So here's hopefully the Angels signing Shohei and going to Japan in a couple years, maybe. That'd be pretty cool for a pregame.
I forgot that too. Yeah, right. The Williamsport. Obviously we saw a bunch of photos and videos of the guys interacting with the kids, but overall, how did you feel like those guys? I mean, they played a game, they get on the plane, they end up in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, they do all the signings, and then they're here, we're gonna put you in a minor league stadium for a game. How overall did those guys kind of adjust to that and react to all that stuff?
I think the players actually loved it because it was cool, because it was fun to go see the players or see the Little League players in the morning and get to meet the kids. And just even the crowd, it was cool. The minor league stadium, because it was like all kids in there mostly and just their families. Mm-hmm. And so it was loud and it was just a fun kind of background. But it was one of those things that would have been better if it wasn't part of a crazy road trip. The fact they had to go to New York and then they had to go to Detroit. Then they had to go to Cleveland, and then they had to go to Williamsport, and then go to Baltimore. So that Baltimore series, you could tell they were just totally wiped out. So it really wasn't fair in terms of just the whole grind of the schedule. But otherwise, the players loved it. And you could tell they were actually really excited to be there and be part of that.
So there's video of, I think it was Brandon Marsh for sure. And I think was it Packy Naughton going down the hill at the Little League World Series. Was there any kind of like red flags going up as far as Angels management was like, hey, what are you doing flying down that hill? We need you for the season.
I think they probably would have had more guys do it if it wasn't raining, because the Indians had all their guys. Even the Indians GM, Antonetti, did his slide down the hill and all that stuff. So yeah, I thought about doing it too when we got there before the rain started, but ended up not doing it. A couple other riders did it, and exactly like I thought it was going to go, they looked like idiots and they got like grass stains all over their clothes. And I was like, I have to work on that. I don't want to go to work with a bunch of grass stains and roll around on the floor and then somebody takes video of me and then it goes viral for looking like an idiot. So I didn't need that. I was fine just taking video of them instead. Yeah, just watching and hanging out. So that was cool. It was awesome.
That does sound like a lot of fun and just a different experience too for the players. And like you mentioned, like Andonetti, like the GM, wow, he got literally down and dirty right there with the guys.
Right.
That's really, really cool. So obviously there's a lot to look forward to. The season's about 3 weeks away from being over for the Angels again, unfortunately. But Rhett, thank you very much again for jumping on the podcast. Always fun talking to you. Really looking forward to the off season and, having you back on when there hopefully is a huge signing for the Angels and we can talk about how the dynamic of the team changes there. Hopefully, fingers crossed, it is a pitcher.
Yeah, right. That'd be kind of fun. At least even for me as a reporter, I'd rather cover a team that can actually pitch a little bit. Games go faster.
There's been some quick ones, though, recently.
There has been. Because the offense was slumping for a little bit. They weren't really hitting much, so that kind of helps. But no, yeah.
All right, Rhett. Thank you very much, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime. Always fun.
I want to talk about Spotify Green Room. Spotify Green Room is a live, audio-only sports talk platform, which is free to download and free to use. You can talk to other fans, athletes, and insiders in real time. Perfect for watch parties, debates, post-game breakdowns, and reacting to breaking news. All you need to do is download the Spotify Green Room app free in the iOS or Android App Store. Create a profile, link it to your Twitter, and join. That's it. It's that easy. So go ahead and check out Spotify Green Room. And welcome back. I want to thank again, Rhett, for jumping on. Always available for us here. And really, really appreciate it. Definitely, if you do not follow him already on Twitter, if you do not already have his tweets, alert you when it happens. Definitely do it. It's at Rhett Bollinger on Twitter. Spelled out exactly how it sounds. At RHETTBOLLINGER. Again, I do this with not only Rhett, but obviously Jeff Fletcher and Sam Blum, but set an alert on your phone to where anytime they tweet or anytime news comes out and they report it, articles and all that stuff, you get the update on your phone. That's what I do. It's the best way of doing it, but definitely check it out. Again, at Rhett Bollinger, MLB.com writer for the Angels, and he's always been a huge supporter of this podcast, giving his time whenever we ask, and I really, really appreciate it. And like I said in the interview, can't wait to the off season, and hopefully Angels make some big moves. Hopefully it's a pitcher. We can have him on, talk about how that affects the team, how that makes the team better. And, you know, if there's a trade or anything like that, we'll also have him on and just totally talk about how the dynamics of the organization might be changing. Who knows? Hopefully bigger and better things for 2022. So that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the All Angels podcast. Again, follow us on our social media stuff at @Halo_Haven. That's both our Twitter and our Instagram. And if you're listening to this on the iOS Apple podcast, please give a review. Please rate 5 stars. Still trying to build this out bigger. Really looking forward to the offseason. And again, hopefully we're able to get the guys the Angels need to make this a more competitive team. You've seen what they've been able to do with, you know, 3 or 4 of their top guys on the IL at a time. They're still kind of hovering around 500. So they're able to get a top of the line front end starter and just absolutely lock it down, keep Rozelle, it would definitely make this team a whole lot more competitive going into next season. I think as Angel fans, this will be desperately want. So Angels last homestand starts Friday. You might be listening to this on the way to the Angel Stadium. I will be out Saturday at the game, hopefully to catch a W versus the Oakland A's. So until next time, I am Dan Garcia, and this has been another edition of the All Angels Podcast.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The NBA Finals are heating up. Looking for hot takes on all the postseason action? The Old Man and the Three, presented by BMW, is the podcast to listen to for the ultimate finals coverage. Host and former NBA sharpshooter J.J. Redick not only has a plugged-in perspective on the action from his time in the league, but he's also announcing the games in real time for ESPN. J.J. has the ultimate insider point of view, and he's taking you along for the ride as he breaks down the best defensive schemes, dunks, and drives from each game. And speaking of incredible drives, there's no better place to tune into your new favorite podcast, The Old Man and the Three, than in a standard-setting BMW. Luxury meets power to create a wholly new driving experience. Push the limits this NBA season with the brand that set the ultimate standard, BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.